interrupting the current neo-colonial cricketism. Boy, haven't we fallen for something here, folks. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricket Tude Busting episode BTW Arlem 442. Number brought back a memory of a car I used to have. Probably the fastest thing we ever made, put together with a brother-in-law of mine. We put together a car that just was flat, powerful. Anyway, pretty interesting what mechanics can do. And that's not the most efficient stuff. What happened to our Jetsons car, folks? And remember, in the digital social credit system, no one will hear your screams. As this thing is going to be rolling out. There's nobody yet to stop it. I hear the resistance is sitting there ready to come back. It's building. I am finally able to see a little bit of it. People certainly have been upset. There's a contingent of the society that's just not going to put up with it. But I see lots of news about how they're all going to go, what, to lawyers? And all they have to be doing relative to this is be doing the objective record making that I've been telling you. Put yourself on the record of what's going on. And we had another, I'll talk a little bit later on the moving iteration of what we have to put up with relative to that affidavit I told you that I created and been advancing. I hope you all went to the website and read that and listened to some of the videos from last week for teaching people how that would work. And then we had to move this through, and we're having some interesting, subtle results. But it's going to be they want your jobs. They want to take you out. And if you're not going to go with the program, they want you gone. What I'm offering is a way to make a record that puts you in the battle, keeps you in the battle, and maybe gets some of your stuff that they were trying to steal from you also. Remember, if they get rid of the old people, they get rid of the pension that they were obligated to in their books. If they get rid of you and your job, they get rid of, and you're wrong, you get rid of your unemployment. That's another obligation on their books, that they've been taking money from you. And so I'm offering you make a record, and it comes out again here, that you need to really timely file what those are. Just get your affidavits in. Even if you want to do, even without the medical or the religious, if you just want to put in the contention that the employer has not declared a non-fraudulent necessity for a business. And for those companies assuming state power, which I've seen documents that they're doing that, you then also put on top of them they didn't do to demonstrate the non-fraudulent exigency for their emergency. So one's in a business is a necessity and government is emergency. Anyway, before we get there, I want to touch something that a little bit irritates me. And also, it actually sounds like me. If you read the title here in the U.S., the Supreme Court has ruled that vaccinated people worldwide are products, patented goods, according to U.S. law, no longer human. Well, if you have listened to me or half listened to me, you would have almost said, well, that guy behind the woodshed has said that before. And you almost might have said, well, they may have got an inspiration from the guy behind the woodshed. But there's a couple things wrong with this, and I wanted to point it out. You got to be very careful at what we pick up and what we get promoted. And this is from something called truth11.com. What bothered me even by the website was that likely that's not truth. Why? Because the truther movement came up after 9/11 and all this other nonsense, and it was a bunch of misinformation. Don't get me wrong, there's always good information inside, but that's just enough to entice you. And I read this report, and I'm thinking, well, that sounds like what I just said here months and months ago, relative to these patents and the product and the injection and the GMO. And I recognize really quickly, though, when you read this after the story, after the title, you don't read anything about how you get from point A to point B. And they rely on one Supreme Court case that state is ruled that vaccinated people worldwide are products. Now, how is the Supreme Court, first of all, have a jurisdiction to rule worldwide is a problem. How they are now saying that you're no longer human in the title would be a violation of what I said. You're not a human animal. You're not a monster by definition. That's what the definition of that is. The human is a creation, it looks like, of the Vatican religious system, humanizing you, bringing you into an animal need for salvation through them. It's only happened since like the 1400s, the word human has existed. Why the adjectival addition to man, to hue, the color, is one other view. You're colored man. So I said, you're colored people. That's your civil rights. I keep pointing this out to people. You have to really be careful on what you're going to adopt. But this really a bit irked me a bit. Because if you read Surf, if you listen to me, half listen to me, and then you read this title, you would have thought that we would be consistent on this. But I want to offer what I think this ends up really being. And I don't know the intention of the authors or the people of this website. I just know what my experience tells me and how I get and what speaks to me through it. Their opening lines are here. And here's the other thing. Again, together with truth, you tend to be induced and enticed to believe. It says here now, the title was that the Supreme Court ruled the vaccinated people worldwide are products, patented goods, according to U.S. law, no longer human. But you start reading the story. It says the number of people dying from COVID vaccine is being covered up. The official numbers are in the tens of thousands, which is more than enough to halt COVID vaccine on the planet. The actual number of people injured or dead after receiving the vaccine is already in the millions, blah, blah, blah. Statistics have been distorted. Well, that's the science. Statistics, the CDC tells us, statistics is epidemiology. And that's statistics, and that's cooking the books. That's the ability to cook the books. The science they're using is the same underpinning bean counting that they use for risk management. Anyway, so that's not even the point about what I want to talk about. I just want to point, when you start reading this, there's truths that are here, but they're not understood truths. And they're trying to push something I've told you is likely what could happen, but jumping from the premise right to a court case, which really only shows us the first step. And here's the danger. When we go to that court case, I'm going to stop reading on the story. It keeps going on. You don't need to really hear it. You need to read it. You need to then compare what I'm talking about. And you need to go and understand how people get taken down and how they have false knowledge, or they develop knowledge that they base other things on that they thought was foundational and it wasn't at all. And they run down a premise, and then they find out later they don't have the foundation to go point to point to prove what they actually know. Because if you read this on the surface, you've heard me say, not by a Supreme Court decision, not worldwide, but by a number of steps and some decisions of courts in the United States under U.S. law, there has been a precedent set that the things that you put in your body, if GMO, are possessed proprietarily by those that own that patent. Now, we go to the Supreme Court case they refer to in this case. And this happens to be, when I first saw it, that's when I started to feel a little bit indignant about the promotion of this more than the substance of it. And it's the Association for Molecular Pathology et al. Versus Myriad Genetics Incorporated. And this is the case that I talked to you about. I said, quickly go to Wiki and go look at these cDNAs. This is the case that is that definition. It has nothing to do with patents and humans and being worldwide and nothing. And so let's go to the holding to show that. And here's the problem, before I move on to that, the point I want to make with it. People read the article and you look at the court case and you do not see anything from the court case that states what they're trying to push, what they're trying to sell you. Certainly it's wrong. It's not correct what they say there. It isn't supported in the document. The court case doesn't. And you're left without the foundation to get from point A to B. And you look at that title and then you hear someone like me talk about it and you go, well, that guy's flaming. He's an idiot. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. Then they respond to the court case and they dismiss. This is like counter-intel or whatever the heck it is. This is a reverse psychology that's going on that works in people. And you dismiss the idea that you might have a proprietary thing in you that can be controlled external to you by other court precedent. And you dismiss the entirety of what I'm trying to tell you is going on as they move this thing through in this fraud that they move on for commerce and control. And so we move into this thing. So you don't dismiss that. It's possible if you look at the proprietary nature of the Monsanto cases, as I told you years ago, was set up for the precedent to do this whole thing. That you don't look at that title and dismiss it. Because I told you it's a possibility or probability. When you go through the precedent, when someone connects all those dots, you will be, not worldwide, just for you, you will be that proprietary part and can be deemed to be the trespasser against a patent. Or be, to that part, controlled as to what you can do. with your own blood or with your life or what blood you can get. And so this is, becomes a different analysis, and I don't want people, and I got irritated because it allows people to dismiss the very real potentials they need to know for a future potential. But let's just go through the holding here on this case, just to show you that it has nothing to do with declaring that people were property and human and all that monster stuff and anything else. Certainly not worldwide. And as I see, quickly interjection, my dog Grex has entered the room, the RLM chat room. If you're listening, I hope you're listening. You probably are. We got your comment. I haven't responded to it, but we checked out that link on the 2 month, I think it was 2 weeks ago that you had a problem, or 3 weeks ago. We can't find a problem with it, and I've re-looked at that and rechecked it. And so I appreciate hearing about it. We checked into it, but we're not having a problem. So if you can explain what our problem was on that link, I'd like to know, because I want people to read that story. Happened to be with the Life Flight and your ability to get cheaper Life Flight instead of $70,000. You pay $70 for insurance, but I want to make sure people got to see it. Thank you, my dog, Greg, for that heads up. Now, getting back to the story, it was held, and I'm going to read a little bit here, but I'm going to just start skip. I'm going to read the Hess setup, and I'm going to skip because it gets kind of technical. It gets with inside the science, and this cDNA is the patentable thing. It's not the DNA. And they explain in this case, this is the case that explains the distinction between things that are natural and non-patentable and the things that are done in the lab by a technician that can be patentable. Now, for our purposes, it may not look any different when it comes out like we see they're doing in a synthesized weapon, a chemical weapon. And I'm still looking, folks. There's nothing else that shows that we're into a biological microorganism condition. Nothing. Still to today. But let me just read a couple things here to show you, when you go to the case, you're not going to hear that title, that we're all property, worldwide, all this, and we're humans, and all this other. You're not going to hear any of that. It has to do with two companies. One's trying to patent some stuff, and another one's coming out against an infringement. And the court's going to decide the issue there relative to the propriety of a patent and whether it exists, actually exists in law or not. A naturally occurring held. A naturally occurring DNA segment is a product of nature and not patent eligible merely because it has an isolated, but cDNA is patent eligible because it is not naturally occurring. Now this cDNA is this synthetic RNA type stuff, hybridization, as we've talked about, when it goes in the cell picks it up. It's, again, the cell is induced to pick it up and process it. But this case is all about the distinction between what is patentable, what is not, and where that line is. And then based on that line, what the relative rights of the claims of the parties are. Then we go down Myriad. This is the company, one of the companies, the defendant being sued. Myriad's DNA claim falls within the law of natural exception. Myriad's principal contribution was uncovering the precise location of genetic sequence of the BRCA1 and the BRCA2 genes. Diamond versus Chakrabarty is central to the most patent eligibility inquiry, whether such an action was new, quote, with markedly different characteristics from any found in nature. Myriad did not create or alter either the genetic information encoded in the BRCA1 or the BRCA2 genes or the genetic structure of the DNA. It found an important and useful gene, but groundbreaking, innovative, and or even brilliant discoveries does not by itself satisfy the Section 101 inquiry, which is the patent law section for what, how you analyze this. Again, this is all just, they're just reducing this whole thing to black and white and people trying to get away with stuff or not, and that's what the judges are supposed to do in their best nature, decide these questions, if they are. Maybe they're not issues at all, there's someone trying to get away with something. And this is why we're supposed to, you know, keep that law, if you will, that objective basis between us, because this kind of stuff happens. This is all, okay, so I'm going to keep on focus here. So they said Myriad did not create something novel in one respect. Myriad's patent description highlight the problems in its claims, and they go through the whole list here that they go through, and we all just trip through. Finally, Myriad argues that Patent and Trade Office past practices awarding gene patents is entitled to deference. A case where Congress had endorsed the PTO practice in subsequent legislation. There has been no such endorsement here. The United States argued in the Federal Circuit And in the, this court, that isolated DNA was not patent eligible under Section 101. And going on to Section C here, cDNA is not a, quote, product of nature, so it is a patent eligible under Section 101. cDNA does not present the same obstacles to patentability as naturally occurring isolate DNA segments. In creation results, its creation results in exons only molecule, which is not naturally occurring. Its order of exons may be dictated by nature, but the lab technician unquestionably creates something new when introns are removed from DNA sequence to make cDNA. Section D of the holding, the important part, which is really all you can rely on in a case, really, and if your facts are the same. But going on, this case is an this case, it is important to note, does not involve method claims, patents on new applications of knowledge about BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes, or the patentability of DNA which the order of the natural occurring nucleotides has been altered. Well, that's right in GMO, isn't it? And so there it is. That's the whole entire holding of the case relied on under the title that in this U.S. Supreme Court, the Supreme Court has, in the U.S., the Supreme Court has ruled that the vaccinated people worldwide are products, patented goods, according to U.S. law, no longer human. Sort of how it sounded like I was saying if you're half listening to me. But that case does not say that. That case does identify what novel is and how it becomes novel when they're dealing with something natural. And that begins your foundation of how we go from nature into something commercial, into something protected, into something synthetic, most important. None of this is natural. As I told you, when I found out when pigs fly flu, folks, way back when I first started broadcasting, there was novel this and novel that, and nobody at that time understood novel means patent. You say novel, you're talking patent. We're not talking a reading book. It means patent. It means synthetic. It means technician-made, man-made. There's nothing that comes through a novel pathogen that's not man-made. And so I would wish people would get this, because there's no question at that point that we're not dealing with a natural thing. This thing that they said was novel is novel, that they've given control over the government, over emergencies over, was part of that biodiversity convention, where we were sharing GMO DNA and going to keep it all together, and we're supposed to be peace and kumbaya in the world on war, and so we're not going to poison each other. It was all a setup to be able to do that. Why? Because the U.S. code says that you have to create that second use. If it could start military, but it will be wrong unless you find a dual use, the public benefit. So this whole thing is using, avoiding law. It's like the loopholes in the law creating this situation that they allow synthetic things to be considered natural pandemics, which are man-made disasters against you, the war against you. Title 50 is the War Department. It's illegal to make chemical weapons, unless, and I refer to you again to Clint Richardson including that section in his lethal injection video up front, and tells you all about, it reads to you how that works. And so I guess I was really miffed. They use a similar sounding thing I've told you can be made dot to dot precedentially by court cases and other things. And yet they refer to one case that does not do any of that. And that is a setup for the takedown for knowledge if you think that that isn't possible. And so I wanted to be on record about that. Maybe nobody saw this article, but this is indicative of lots of information coming under truth that clearly is not supportable by the statements. And yes, you shouldn't read just the title, but you find out I do my broadcast on titles, and I can untie all kinds of nonsense with just the titles. But why do I do it that way? Because if the story doesn't even touch it, or the story tries to lead it on, that's a deception anyway. But I can unpack things right from the titles. And when they're wrong, when they're deception, I have a ton of information I can pull from. And when they're true, I got nothing to say about it. You don't even hear about it when they're true. And this is the thing that comes under, you see, the Truth 11. What is that? The Truther movement. What was that? Where are we from it all? We're supposed to all see the truth and the American way and all that stuff. I'm hearing crickets. I still hear crickets. I'm still playing crickets. I want to stop playing the crickets, folks. And what that means is that we, the people, yeah, I know some of you laugh, we, the people, each one of us, steps up and defends ourselves against this stupidity. And it's just stupidity. How could we let, we have to be that stupid in order to allow this kind of a crime against us, this sort of oppression to happen without a whimper. Or just the people, I'm not going to be affected by it, this or that, the other. Or in between, where you say, I'm not affected that much. I can capitulate a little bit. I can compromise just a little bit. But here we have I've had this on my tab for a couple of weeks. I never got to it. I put it right up front this time. This is showing you what novel means. This is showing you it's not natural. It couldn't be bats if it was novel. For me, I told you right up front, that was the cover. It's still the cover. They're still talking about it. And yet, the answer is clearly in the discussion of what the subject matter is by the term novel. And it's the thing that even Dr. David Martin, I think he's tripping on. He doesn't understand that novel. When he says the word novel, he's done. There's no proof. We don't have to go to the patent law. He was correct to do so. You need that evidence. What I'm saying for our idea, for understanding quickly, all you need to know is that it's synthetic. It's going to be a synthetic man-made attack. And the proof is there. I don't know what more of this we have to say. This is what I'm saying. Over the year, almost 2 years now, it's reproven itself over and over. Here's my continuing problem for us and you. What are we really dealing with then? What really are we dealing with? And we may have a little bit of insight coming as another email came and I didn't have the time to do it. But let me move on to show you that moving into what they've now, this synthetic thing does that we all understand has been, the safety mechanisms have come off, the wraps are off. I told you fraud would be living underneath fraud now when in the financial sector in 2009, fraud was made law in the fact of taking toxic or fraudulent debt and monetizing it to be part of your life. And so this is just, to me, it's just an extension, another path of confirming extension of the corruption of our world and our life. And the people are still crickets. And I still have my listener, to take the phrase of a colleague, if you will. My listener. That's all we have. The people that are speaking the truth have listener. Very few people that are actually defending. Handfuls that are trying hard. And I can't appreciate that much, to say much. I mean, thank you. I think you have a different awareness as you move along and you start seeing the truth really is sitting there in that black and white I keep talking about. And these people that are now ruling our lives absolutely without law, because fraud is now agreed to. If it hadn't been understood before, it certainly was settled by 2009. And then we look at this thing, which is actually an economic takedown. Remember, the World Monetary Fund said this policy, vaccine policy, it surmounts economic and fiscal and monetary policy. So this is it, folks. We don't really need any more. What we do need is to start defending ourselves. And I'm attempting to show us that we don't need to stand on the tracks of the train coming down on us. We need to step aside that. We don't need to throw ourselves on the tracks if we were out off, and we might actually not have to engage if we know where to keep the burden. Not because it's my opinion, because that's the so-called due process. That's the process due. And you don't have to commit and consent until you're ready. And that's what, getting back to that affidavit, that's what the affidavit does up front. But moving on about what the effect of having this lack of knowledge of what they've done with synthetic, what should never be here, and this should be enough proof. And I was looking for a newer link because I got this link last week, and then a couple of you sent me this link again here at the end of the week this week. 13,000 deaths, nearly 600,000 adverse events reported to the COVID vaccines as debate heats up over boosters. I don't know what the debate is. Anyway, this is from the Children's Health Defense. I'm just grabbing this just to say there is evidence from the CDC, from the official record. Yes, they're not even reporting it accurately. you would have thought that 13,000 deaths would have been enough. And when you saw that it's not, to stop this, you have to know them when you see them, right, Cowboy Tech? You know it when you see it, that it is an attack against you. You don't have to be told. Where do I get that? None of my opinions hardly anymore. I have a couple of opinions, but not here. It's written, and I hold on to the fact that I'm believing it because it seems to be true. Lieber Code, Article 1. It's the link at the bottom of my blogcaster page. You can go read the link to go find it yourself. Article 1. You don't have to be told you're being occupied or attacked or anything. You'll know it. And that nobody really knows that or puts that in force and effect to respond in defense, and proper defense against a superior force. I don't understand the question anymore. It is our problem. You know, we could be surprised. Now we're fumbling around for our defense tools and defense appliances. That's a little bit of one thing. We should have never been there, but we're not even fumbling with our defense appliances. And I'm really not going to go to that. We're not going to go to the number two article because that means we've really, really gone. But 13,000 deaths, 6,000 adverse events, and it's still okay against you all. And that's just in this country, the United States. So, but in face of that, in face of this thing, there is that reality that when people want to push back, they can. The whole people is not you. The whole people are legislatures. The whole people have supplanted you, and we have in a state in Alaska, which, again, these are tabs I'm now getting to. I put them right up front this time so I wouldn't miss them. Just evidence that there's a way to push back. You get there's a will inside the government. They're not focused on how they're going to go about doing it. They end up doing the wrong things. I've been asking you to understand better so you can guide that, if you will, for yourself, and then it'll help others. And that's how you start to speak. You start to speak in the public good. For as much as I look around and wonder how much public good can there be, that doesn't matter. We still have to stop this, and I'm looking for my observation. Do take any avenue right now that you can. Dunleavy issues administrative order precluding Alaska vaccine passports. This was after, here weeks ago, this was after that they got attacked for really causing their problems. But there's a will to shut this down. This is still an administrative order. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy today issued, this is months ago, an administrative order 321 stating the state Alaska will not require vaccine passports in order to travel to or around Alaska. Now look at here, they're limiting the jurisdiction. He's correct to do so. That's all his jurisdiction is. But remember, the phrase is that if it threatens from outside the state, he would have authority. So impliedly, he's still agreeing by this executive order that there is that potential threat. This governor, though he is not going to allow vaccine passports as far as a few months ago in that state, and they have kind of relieved some of this pressure as well, their legislature is conducive to be listening to more critical review of what was supposed to happen. Like, how about if you just did your communicable disease laws and not find that there's anything actually going on by the communicable disease law? Would be something you could still tell Governor Dunleavy here, to say, you don't really, your administrative order really doesn't have any force and effect because it can't rely on any emergency as state law, as you recognize your authority's limited state law, as state law requires. In other words, where was that first medical report? Where was the assessment from a doctor? Where was the assessment by the public health official? Where was the due process given to anyone going through the process of being identified or suspected? Yeah, where was all that? And without all that, you have a case in Alaska and everywhere else that you have these governors that have been, and legislatures that have been against trying to make things mandatory. You need to step up and you need to be that voice of clarity and law. The law, the black and white, sits there to instruct them what should have happened. In these states, you have the path, everyone's traveling somewhat in the same direction. And so, again, I was encouraged that Alaska is one of the outstanding states, just to show the contention to the narrative that's been the fraud against us. Alaska State Senate passes bill aimed at easing COVID strain on hospital, but amends it to oppose vaccine mandates. So there's a will to stop the mitigation side. What needs to happen is you need to jump into and say that they don't have an authority, actually, to have a concern over mitigation side. They needed to follow the law relative to identifying who is actually the infectious agent to deal with. Stop making healthy people victims. See, here's the point. Why would you make a bill? Why is it more efficient or thought to be more efficient to say we're not going to have mandatory vaccines than it would have been to say, hey, well, we don't identify the infectious agent in our state. We don't see it. As soon as they say that, everything else falls away, doesn't it? And if not, mark on the beats of protonmail.com. Fill me in on how that doesn't resolve it. Why is this a continuing thing? Shows you there's some hesitation on how either the Democrats or the Republicans want to impose your future prison. Why else would fraud be continued in every state that has laws that would forbid it? So we move into now the pressure from the Fed, and if they can't find the emergency in the states, then Biden's toothless here. But he's getting some force and effect and traction. And I've said businesses who are even not involved are fearful. You have to maybe protect yourself. You may have to have these answers though, but this leads us into that affidavit thing that I've been trying to get people to do for themselves. Again, it's just an avenue for some people. I think it's the avenue for all of it because it has a savings clause relative to the obligations and duties and burdens that have not been met by either the state or the company, which is what you put both feet on and you hold down for yourself that they have not done, that is their burden. So my affidavit is not really restricted to religious covering or even medical or anything else. It's restricted to the law side and the noncompliance with that at this point, not saying that they can't, but we'll see. I certainly don't want to be in the way of a legitimate emergency. But I don't know. You know, this synthetic stuff puts it all into a whole new ballgame. Biden's vax mandate to be enforced by fining companies $70,000 to $700,000. And so here's the big club to cause fear instead of critical thought on whether or not that can even happen. President Joe Biden didn't just announce a COVID-19 vaccine mandate on companies employing 100 or more people. He plans to enforce it. On Saturday, listen to all the players here involved and agreeing to this fraud. Speaker Nancy Pelosi's house, her house, not your house, her house, quietly tucked an enforcement mechanism into their $3.5 trillion, inconceivable numbers here, reconciliation, close quote, quote, reconciliation, close quote, bill. Reconciliation bill. With whom? Passed it out of the Budget Committee and sent it to the House floor. Buried on page 168, and if you get this link, it looks like you can get the link to that. You can read it for yourself. It's important to see this, too, so you can speak in the terms of the legislation, the black and white, and not out of your opinion. It's so important just to use the words. I could tell you a bunch of stuff that happened this last week while I'm writing my complaint that I'm telling you, go to the black and white. It directs the attention right to what needs to happen. It's not a re-phraseology. You don't need any of that stuff. It's copy and paste where you understand you need to do it. But buried in the 168 pages of the mega bill is a tenfold increase in fines for employers that, quote, willfully and, quote, repeatedly or even seriously violate a section of the labor law that deals with hazards, death, or serious physical harm to their employees. I'm going to stop reading there because we're going to move right into those rules. And so the OSHA, the OSHA, so-called, Occupational Safety Health Administration, if I have that remembered right, used to have like a $14,000 fine, and they were complaining it wasn't stringent enough. And so this is what fosters this internalization and legalization of more theft to use as clubs against people. Let me go back to the force and effect of the consideration of or seriously violate a section of labor law. And this gets us right back to why you file those affidavits. Let's go back and, without reading more, just highlight the fact they identify in the article section 654 of Title 29. Okay, and it says duties of employers and employees. Don't shrug your shoulders. Go read the section. Go see what it says. You're going to have to go a little bit more research beyond it, but this is what they're talking about. What are the duties and obligations on employers? An employer shall furnish to each of his employees employment and place of employment which are free from recognized hazards that are causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm to his employees. 2, shall comply with occupational safety and health standards promulgated under this chapter. So now they've been talking strictly with federal, but now the local AOA, OSHAs, state law, picked this up. But it's all federal. Why? It's in commerce. And these laws prevail over state. And you may have that little adjustment to make when you go from state to federal. But I went in the affidavit directly to federal. Then we're going on to here B to read the rest. To the employee now, B, each employee shall comply with the occupational safety and health standards and all rules, regulations, and orders issued pursuant to this chapter, which are applicable to his own actions and conduct. And I say, wow, listen to all that you get to do if you understand how to read between the lines. That word applicable is a big challenge position. I'm not going to get lost in all that. I'm just telling you, you go read the black and white. Did you know as an employee in this country, you might be subject to having to know the federal law too. In this case, I'm saying you need to jump there because the states are completely corrupted in what they're doing relative to this COVID nonsense, this fraud, emergency fraud, and they, in some instances, if the companies are assuming state power under it. You need a third-party witness to allow for the correction. And you're not big enough on your own. You slave in the master and slave relationship. So let's go look one more point, because it was very, I had almost smiled. This is so serious though. You don't do all this. I don't know how you have a hope and a prayer about how you even try to start to defend yourself. And it's not all that much. You do need to know the whole thing, but you only need to focus on some of it, at least as the way I can see is coming down and how it's actually being implemented. But if you look at the section right before that, was the very section that I put a part, subpart of that into the second affidavit, which happens to be the covering affidavit, the introduction. That section, U.S. Code, 29 U.S.C. Code 653. This is the law that is supposed to be followed by employers and employees. Geographic applicability, judicial enforcement, applicability to existing standards, reports to Congress on duplication and coordination of federal laws, workers' compensation law, or common law, or statutory rights, duties, or liabilities of employers and employees unaffected. There's your savings clause. Nothing, number 4, in the affidavit, the second one, once we saw that the companies were going to balk at the assertion that they had a duty to do, and that they hadn't fulfilled the duty that was in the law, I jumped right to the statutory savings clause, put that in the second affidavit, which needs to be put together now because of how the employers are treating it, and you need to make your complete record faster so that there's no mistake. It says, nothing in this chapter shall be construed to supersede or in any manner affect any workman's compensation law or to enlarge or diminish or affect in any other manner the common law or statutory rights, duties, or liabilities of employers and employees under any law with respect to injuries, diseases, or death of employees arising out of and in the course of employment. I highlighted this last week as well, tangentially jumping across it. This is becomes now this week, as we're working with this and people filing these affidavits, a very important point. This has to be shown to have originated from the course of employment. This is the law obligation on both employers and employees. Do not worry about taking on a duty here, an obligation, because this is a savings clause protecting certain things in you. And it is part of what you'll find the state refers to. There's no state law that is not agreeing and following this title. Again, commerce is the exclusive jurisdiction of Congress. And labor is part of that. And protecting the slave workers for more production has been found to be important, and so the government, the federal government, picked it up and protected you all. That's the benefit it's giving you. But here it is, your savings provision to use what? Any law, impose any law that they failed to follow, that there's the duty of the employer to follow underneath the section that the Biden is going to invoke in the appropriations of more money to threaten your employer. And the short bit of that is, once you file your forms, and once you have given your exemption, and there is no obvious problem with it, or it otherwise complies, in other words, it looks facially accurate, your employer really isn't subject to this anymore. When they're fighting you, they are. And then they bring up, as the first covering affidavit says, triggers, when they resist, they trigger that into be a discrimination suit. What that does for on you is that you then have to go ahead and officially file that with the Department of Labor. If you don't, then the record stands that they were right, because you've not asserted anything that is right here in the savings clause tells you you need to. And when you, and then you go into what's applicable. My first, I wrote those papers before even knowing about this, folks. I just got to tell you, when you understand some of this, it's very clear what has to happen in every subject matter. And so I wrote the clause because I knew that I'm going to attack what they're using in order to impose the stuff they should never ask until they're required to show the necessity and the hardship upon them that you caused in your employment. All this was answered in the second affidavit. The first one merely asserted an exception. But it wasn't limited, although it's limited to religion on the title, it's not limited in scope, because it insists that the employer do its duty before even causing you to have to do that. That document shows a facial violation to your fundamental rights to begin with, pursuant to this section. And so we go in, we see there's a threatening your employer. Their employer doesn't want to get a $70,000 fine. That's an administrative problem on top of that. And again, we're in administrative law. That's the other thing you have to understand. Remember, this section also talks about who's going to hear the judicial complaint coming out of the administrative record. So you're instructed on really how to do this. If you don't, look away. Look at what I'm saying. Embrace it, if you will, for that much as you can embrace this stuff. This is about your life. This is about your livelihood, maybe protecting your unemployment, which we heard in Rhode Island, will be denied to you if you have no other word in your mouth, no other record made. And they, Rhode Island, first exposed timing. And I'm going to have to now say it's come up again in another state. The timely filing, as I've told you all the time, in administrative law, you have to timely file your records. Don't be lazy. File anything right, or correct enough, if not complete, and if you need, you amend later. As I've been saying, even if you file the state form, which is improper and inadequate, if they deny, then you come back and amend what you originally filed to take away the one that you filed before and replace it with the following affidavits that are more complete. And then, as I told somebody, you claim that their suggestion to use their insistence to use the first form was a fraudulent inducement to allow them to discriminate against you. Okay, so what you're doing is you're setting up, you have a knowledge of the battlefield, and you realize, you start, it's like chess in a way. If they go there, I'm going to go here. If they try to do that, we're going to do this. Well, how are you identifying that? It's the burdens they have that they fail to do. And you, as I've said before, when you realize what these people do and what they don't do, more importantly, they will not comply with the law. They're walking time bombs of failure. All I have to do is dig the pit for the beast, and it'll walk between, when it goes from its den to the water every day, it's going to fall in the pit I dug. Why? Because it's going to do the same thing all the time. It has no sense whatsoever. It's never going to follow the law, otherwise it wouldn't be on that path. And so I just have to trap the beast in its own laziness, essentially. It's actually dereliction of duty and a breach to the trust and a treason, essentially, when you get down to the bottom of it, because it makes war on the laws by not adhering to them. And this is coming up more and more. I was a little bit apprehensive to use the word treason, but I can't stay away from it. We first discussed it officially, I guess, in a way, in a public record of note in our 2013 lawsuit, JMD, Jefferson Mining District versus Kitsap, where we explained that the Bar Association, in promoting all these things and denying property rights and denying what the law was making war on those laws. and we're talking specific to production, which is the foundation of your society. Even though that don't believe you, you're in it. You're assumed into it. It may be called the adhesion contract. It doesn't matter. If you're in a place, you're going to be imposed. And my thought was, well, if that's the case, and I'm not big and powerful enough to stop it, I'm going to have to find that the assertion of that place is actually a fraud upon me and denies me my real status. And the mining law gave me a way to do that really fast. Anyway, that's another thing. Moving on to here, your answers are sitting here. Biden is telling you where it's at. They're not making the rules. They had to go to OSHA. OSHA, I think, maybe promulgates this. It's going to go to the Federal Register. All the employers have the right to attack it right there in the Federal Register. Are they? Can you suggest how? Can you suggest to do so? Can you suggest what they should say? But the last few broadcasts, I've been explaining what they have the right to say, especially when you have the writing in the affidavit for you. It really is theirs as well. Am I saying you take on their gauntlet? Well, if you want your life to be protected, maybe you should. Maybe you need to fight for those that don't understand how, even though they're supposed to be smarter, yeah, they employ a lot of people, they still have attorneys, those people are stupid or criminal treason, the people, or don't understand on the front end of it. How many have you heard step up, and yet everybody goes to an attorney to try and get protected? How many of those cases have we actually heard as actually identified that it's been a fraud and stopped it all, so we don't have to continue doing this? And so, I don't know, how many times you beat your head against the wall and call it good? I don't know. And so let's move on a little bit more. Why do I say, go through your saving clause, like I've said in the mining law, it's all the same, folks. Then you find the saving clause. Now we're going to impose that against a duty that the black and white says is upon the employer. I'm going to go back to the link I sent you in a couple of broadcasts back at Blogcasters. It's at 2J01 Religious Accommodation under the United States Department of Labor. And I want to go back there because these rules are prevailing, ultimately. And it broke it down to a real simple set of requirements. And that's why I focused on it, again, for the broadcast, so I can get the idea out. There's more to see. There's more that could be added. I don't want to get it too technical. It seems to be too much already for a lot of people. And that's just because we're not familiar with it. We haven't been really trained, and I say that really, we should have been trained. We needed to be sat down and go through the steps on how we do this for ourselves, and they made sure that didn't ever happen. And it's going to be getting worse. Now, we don't have to be graduated with having any knowledge of grammar or language or anything anymore now. So, to show you where this is all going, just punch your QR code. That's all you need to do. Put your little fingerprint right there, and we can read what you're going to get today. That's all you're going to need to know, you little monkeys. You human monsters. And so, let me just read the 3 points. I'm going to remind you what I read before. The obligation on the employer, the duty of the employer is to declare on a document the business necessity for the thing they're demanding. Number two, radial.2 on this webpage. Financial costs and expenses must be a part of the documentation in their denial that shows that what they're doing costs them something. And it has to have, it's a certain level and it's not low. It's an undue hardship on them. In other words, what have they done to mitigate having to get rid of you? And then the third radial dot is resulting personal problems. What's the personal problem resulting from your cause in that employment that is their business necessity? I'm going to stay right there for three. There's a few more in this list. Fascinating what you might be able to get into. It depends on how, I don't want to call it creative in the sense I'm making stuff up. It depends on how you can look at your condition and frame what's going on to you within the other radio dots that are listed here from the Department of Labor itself, the rule authority for which all employers ultimately will be pressured to follow and have to follow. Why? Oh, not because a court case said it necessarily, because the Constitution said that Congress has exclusive jurisdiction over regulation and commerce amongst the states. There is an argument, well, this happened internal, but the Wheat case of 1938 said it doesn't matter if it's just internal. If it affects or substantially affects or adversely affects commerce, that's good enough. The Supreme Court gave it to the whole people, not you, the politicians, to decide all this stuff. And all we get to do is the gnashing of teeth if we just, that's all we have to us, or we have to step up and mutually come together in our own benefit to say, wait a minute, that's a maladministration. So, three things. Business necessity, financial costs and expenses, and resulting personal problems relative to that necessity that the business says is what the business is obligated under the duty of the Title 29 laws pursuant to the application of due process in that context on the employer to state in every denial. And the thing I want to say it that way because that's what's not going on. Now, where did I get confirmation of that? Well, one of the cases that I'm dealing with, I didn't know this. I knew we had a union we were having to be up against. I didn't realize it was actually going to be used maybe for the employee's benefit. Where he took the two affidavits that he timely filed to the union, and he said, they just denied me. And so I have an interjection now. That he was denied. What he was not denied on was they accepted the affidavits. They were resisting taking the affidavits before. We argued with them through various employees. They were wrong to do that. We identified the state's attorney, Secretary of State's website showed that they can't require a certain form. They then, 2 or 3 weeks later, accepted the form, and then they almost immediately denied the objection. Now, I just read to you what the DOL says they were supposed to do in that denial. They were supposed to declare the necessity, the financial hardship, and the problems that you caused in your causing the necessity for them. In the union paperwork, as I'm having a colleague read to me, I don't even see any of this stuff, folks, and I see it after the fact. They come up with a term, the black and white. It's in their union contract. Something called interactive process. Because I was asking them immediately, well, where was the due process? Because one of the things that happened is there was the paper filing, the affidavit, they had a decision, there was an appeal, and a second denial, rejection. And I said, wait a minute, you said there's an appeal. What was the due process? It immediately came out of my mind. Why? And that should come from your mind. If they had an appeal, that means there was rules for that. I wasn't involved, but I wasn't privy to that. And I said, well, what's the due process? Where are the rules for that? And then when the union contract, it requires this term called interactive process. I said, there it is, in the union contract. The union that the employee went to with his filings and said, I filed this, and I was rejected. And the union looked at that and said, well, they were supposed to respond to you after a certain date. Here, just days, 6 days ago. After you find it, it was a certain date they were supposed to respond, and they didn't. Then they looked at the documents and said, looks like everything's here. We need to have our attorneys look at this for you. It looks like the employer has violated our union agreement on providing an interactive process, which requires a timely response. And then I looked at this as administrative procedure, and I said, it has to be meaningful. And so I have a link. It says, talking from Rudman Winchell, I think it's an attorney firm, explaining what this interactive process was. It wasn't really defined, and I didn't have time to go find all the technical definitions. I just wanted to see what it is. Well, it explains to us, and if you need to, as an employee, and this will extend out, you're going to find out what's required in every process. Even judicial hearings require. This is all due process is. When you do a meaningful hearing, there are certain requisites and things and predicates and all these things that have to go on. If you don't know that, you waive them. If you know that, you can assert them. And you don't assert them just for the sake of asserting them. There's reasons and purposes why you do. Well, keep calling these employees the state because they're assuming this prerogative power and they can't get it, but where they have not in their interactive process, in the rejection, fulfilled the burden by stating at least the minimum of three things that I pointed out to start with. Their order of rejection does not meet the standard that evidences a meaningful interactive process. That's your first complaint. You're not arguing about your rights and everything else. Now we're in administrative law. What the burdens are relative to that process. This website goes on to say the interactive process is an important component of disability laws under the Americans with Disabilities Act. That was a new one on me. And then I started to think about what they were saying. Do you realize, and when you read through this, maybe you'll see it the same way I do here. I quickly started to pick up, your religious and your medical exemptions are considered disabilities against their fraudulent imposition of a vaccine. And this got me back into the point when we had in the court case in Toulouse, he was imposed with the ADA restriction and found that by the mask implementation incorrectly, he was imposed and had then imposed a caused upon him a disability recognized under the ADA, which was one of communication difficulties. That it didn't happen but for that mask measure. And that's the first clue that everything is topsy-turvy. There's a way to untie the, if it's not a Gordian knot at this point, it's just that you've allowed things to look like it's a hairball. And someone coughed it on the table and you said, okay, that's the law. And wait a minute, that's a hairball. Americans, you're now all, I told you, you're all disabled by what they've done. They had no authority to do that. And how they did it was they didn't follow any law, which that Section 4 says you have a right to assert against them. The interactive process is under the American Disabilities Act, so we are federal, folks. Human Rights Act, MRA, so we go look at that. I haven't even looked over there. There's more, folks. I just know there's more. I'm looking strictly at just getting the due process worked out, because I think that's always going to be enough. I've said this over and over. You stick it to them on the failure that they, on their failures of the meaningful due process steps. You'll never, ever really get to the point of what I've been talking about if you get them where they make the mistakes and they're sufficient. You see that, you can identify where they haven't done it. And then I found out you got to bring back a charge so that now they're doing it criminally or whatever. They're in fault on top of their dereliction. They've caused a harm. And we call it irreparable now. And it happened because they didn't demonstrate the non-fraudulent business necessity that their Department of Labor says is required as a duty under the law. Remember, I've told you, always go look for the duties and obligations and make sure those are done. That's essentially the due process. It's the institution of the jurisdiction for doing such, and that gives them the power and authority to enter into the interactive process, which is essentially meaningful due process in the labor context, and then it sets up a whole standard of things that have to happen between you. In other words, this is not, they get to unilaterally reject without hearing, or even on, well, they call it a hearing, but on a unilateral discussion without the burden also you'll find on the employer to not just reject, but to try and, this is about accommodation. Again, you're disabled by being healthy here, folks. It's a nonsense. They have to work to accommodate. And they have to show on the record how they work to accommodate, not just unilaterally reject, but work to accommodate, and that the ultimate answer was they could not. And there has to be a record of that, of showing of that. And when you understand this is due process in the administrative sense, you may hopefully start to understand why I'm such a stickler on getting the record and sticking on the, making sure due process is on the record and objecting at every point. You don't have to go on and on. You can just go through the points. Real simple. Like I said, this is a 3-point process in the response of a rejection, but you had the duty and obligation here to give me these 3 points, and the denial didn't do that. And I asked for that in my affidavits, which you rejected out of turn and through a fraudulent inducement if you did the original. So you just go on and on. You build your paperwork back up. The affidavit was correct. You show how at every aspect it gave them notice they had more things to do and they violated you. And that shows intention to violate you. What am I working on? But a discrimination claim, I'm working to show it's retaliation as well, aren't I? I'm talking fast. I get excited about this book for you all. I don't know. This is not a silver bullet. None of this. All this stuff that sounds so certain is not a silver bullet, but I can tell you it makes a big difference on how you're going to come through this thing. And you have to come through it unless you give up. And then you capitulate and your silence is consent. And forever, ever, and on, you and your future generations, your progeny, will suffer this. The abuse, essentially. The oppression. You identify it as oppression as well. Why do I do that? Because the equity says oppression is actionable, right? We saw that in the, if you read deep enough in the Jacobson 1905 case, right? I'm not making any of this up. I'm just taking guidance. I'm taking wise counsel where I see it. And hopefully I understand it and apply it correctly to any particular thing. here behind the woodshed, I do it in generalities. It's very difficult. I'm always hesitant, but it's nonetheless. On the other end, when I'm actually doing something for somebody, which is even worse to have to deal with on my side, I'm just like, the pressure is just terrible on dealing with someone else's life, but then the only way I justify is they aren't doing anything anyway. Let's get them a little bit better in a position that they're going to at least be able to defend themselves. And so moving on here, I'm reading more of this. You can read by this link what this interactive process entails. And this was highlighted in a union document. And so now I realize new avenue. Well, we're going to be able to use what the union has already done. Their attorneys wrote this all up. We're just going to make sure that comports to the needs of the employee as well and didn't violate his rights. Look for waivers that they may have given they didn't have the right to do. We have a second analysis. But the union now may step forward and their attorneys, which I have a problem with, but their attorneys are going to review whether or not the paper was, again, timely filed and adequate for what it was supposed to do. Now, what am I looking forward to there? Absent my reticence to listen to an attorney at this point, I'm going to listen. That's what the system speak is going to reflect on what those documents do. Why do I want to do that? I'm watching to see whether or not there was a defect somewhere. Why? Because as soon as I find a defect, I'm going to help patch that. Talk about windows being patched. Yeah, we can patch affidavits that may not be quite right. It's called amending them. And that's the part of the process. Now, I'm not focused on that so much. I'm only looking at it. We may have the people that I don't agree have any authority to review. I don't think that they're capable. They will distill this whole thing down to very simple terms, and they will take out what they're supposed to look at. They probably will likely not challenge that there was no business necessity stated on the rejection. You, the employee, have to tell them. Once you get their answer, you say, but okay, you see this and that and the other, but they didn't do this. The employer didn't do this required by the rule, by the DOL. Here, they didn't do this either. Now what do you say? Now you get a dialogue with the legal representative. System speak people. That's very interesting to listen for. They can, in that regard, be a help. In fact, we've used attorneys inside counties who were arguing the wrong, the agenda speak, then coming in and showing the law, putting embarrassment on the attorney that they're not representing the law, and getting the support of that attorney based on the black and white. No, it's no silver bullet, and it's a lot of work, and you have to have willing people. But you are defending yourself here. In a union with an attorney, we're going to get a review on these affidavits, and believe me, I'm listening, waiting to listen for them. At this point, they were facially accepted by the union reps as a violation of a union rule, which then I'm informed and counseled to go look at something I didn't even know existed. They're referring in a union contract to interactive process, which is the law. It's what they do. I didn't even know about it. But my view is it's meaningful due process. That's all my mind focuses on. Where is that? That's this. The process envisioned in disability laws and regulations, I can't help it. I got to interject all the time. The process envisioned by disability laws to which you are now been subject as healthy people. Would you please understand how nonsensical this whole thing starts out to begin with? Why? Because that statutory law, that this savings clause in Section 4 of Section 653 says can be implemented against this process as a duty, was not followed, and that's your communicable disease law. I've been talking, again, folks, I don't know what people hear me when I say about this stuff. I've been telling you this since before this thing got started. I don't want to say, look at what I've said, how right I was. I'm telling you that you had the knowledge to start then, and we're 2 years late. What I said then is not changing. I don't care how much new information I get. In fact, I'm fortified by it. I get excited by this for you. I'm done with it for me. I'm so done with this stuff. I really, and the complaint I'm writing against the Forest Service. It's been months, folks. I'm done. I can't. My mind is having trouble focusing. But I'll persist. This is not fun. This is not something I ever thought I was going to grow up to have to do. Who'd have thunk this, folks? But here it is now. We have black and white to go. I'm going to run this run on this website to give me advances of knowledge I don't even have, confirming, looking back at my actions relative to telling people things. Am I even in the ballpark? Well, folks, I'm running home runs here. And you should be able to read and see that when you go read the affidavit. The process and vision and disability, and then the response from the employers, which do not meet all this stuff, which the documents, the affidavits, anticipate they have to do. And that's the other thing I want you to see. You can anticipate the future in your affidavits. The process envisioned by disability laws and regulations is one where the employer and employee sit down together and discuss accommodations that will allow the employee to continue performing the normal, essential function of his or her job without overburdening the employer financially or otherwise in doing so. Every word's emphasized here, folks. You understand what that said. They can't just unilaterally kick you out with a rejection. First of all, they have to make a record of all the accommodations that came to the table that they couldn't do based on financial, what the undue hardship is, financial considerations. All this has to be part of your rejection. None of which is happening at this point. It shows us how on target we are relative to, well, until we get into negotiations, if there's going to be any. Again, what did I just say before? I can't help but say this. I can't help how stupid this sounds. The accommodation, which is financial burden from a healthy employee, has to be discussed. Why? Because the business necessity was never declared. Relative to that employee, relative to the causation against the need, what caused the need in the business by the employee. And I'm saying that neutrally. It could be anything here we're talking about. We did see the word disease listed in the subsection 4 of the savings clause. That's what we're, I'll just say, we'll focus for that. Where was the necessity declared the employee was causing the disease, causing the financial necessity, which was a financial hardship that they needed to put this restriction on the employee? Where would it ever be a restriction that a healthy employee in a disease situation would be a financial burden to the employer? Crickets, again, I guess. Importantly, an employer's failure. Did you hear any obligation on the employee here? Employer's failure to engage in this process may be considered disability discrimination under disability laws and regulations and can therefore expose an employer to liability. What did I say was in there? If you read it, I hope you all went and read those just to even see how this works. The last line, I think, the last sentences is, if there's a rejection based on the foregoing affidavits, this is converted into a discrimination complaint. In other words, these two evidence, affidavits are evidences. They stand unrebutted if there's no response by the employer. You put those as supportive of your criminal, administrative complaint to the Department of Labor, federal. And it can expose the employer to liability. Well, let's get back to Biden. What's his exposure to them? He's threatening their pocketbook with his fines. Now, you get to come in and expose them to regulation violations and expose the liability to the crimes against you. Now you've got them boxed if you understand how this starts to work. And then you start asking, what's more reasonable? You just give me my exemption, or you go challenge this whole thing, or you consider yourself to be fearful and can be fined. What do you want to do? You're building up an ability to negotiate man to man, woman to woman, woman to man, whatever your employer-employee relationship with the man or woman that you're employed by, you get to talk to them for real. But you don't just go talk about your opinions. You go, here's your summary bullet points of what had to happen. Here's what they've done. Here's what they're threatening you. You didn't do this part against me. I don't want to go a discrimination lawsuit against you, a complaint, and that's not the limit of my statutory remedies. I don't want to get in a fight with my employer. That's not what I signed up for. And you have to take on their part. You have to understand, have empathy for their position, but have the answers. So moving on, this is very, very instructive for me. I guess that's why I'm excited to tell you. Nice, concise statement from what appears to be reflective of what I find in the rules after seeing this. Once an employee has put his employer on notice that a reasonable accommodation is needed, An employer must, in good faith, can I say it again? In good faith, informally work with the employee to identify an accommodation that will allow the employee to continue performing his job and that is reasonable in light of the situation. Reasonable accommodation, you see this word reasonable over and over, include, for example, periods of leave from work or modifications to job schedules. An employer is not required to provide an accommodation that would impose an undue hardship. In other words, an accommodation that would require the employer to incur a substantial expense or one that is very difficult for the employer to provide. I ask again, what financial hardship would there be to accommodate a healthy person in a workplace not causing any problem? Even so, the employer's burden of demonstrating an undue hardship tends to be a high one and is not easily met. Wow, there you go. Their bar is way high if you know how to keep it up there, not let them, and you don't come flying over with your lack of ability to execute the Fosbury flop in order to get over the bar and knock it down yourself. For those of you sports fans, older sports fans. An employee's requested accommodation must be a reasonable one and must relate to the disability. So when the legislature said you have the right to ask for this religious accommodation, this medical exception in the state of Oregon here, this is what we're talking about for that because that's their specific words, not federal exemption, but exception. I analyzed that for you and explained that would be correct to do and not worry about that part, but when it's the legislature says that you have two avenues of exception, that is, as a matter of law, reasonable. And so you just start qualifying whether you're asking things reasonable and reasonably. Well, if they haven't made a necessity, they've demanded upon you something not even the legislature has allowed. And that's part of that affidavit, if you read closely. It's part of the improperness and inadequateness of what's going on relative to the clauses set up in the first affidavit, which happens to be the one that's actually second now because of the way they're doing it, but the way employers are mistreating this. An accommodation is not unreasonable simply because it requires the employer to incur some additional expense. So not only is it not just a financial dime it has to spend, it has to be an undue hardship. And I ask again, how is a healthy, productive employee an undue hardship, causing an undue hardship on the employer? And if you keep it where I'm telling you, that's going to be the continuing question, although it's not the only question. You have to field maybe others. The point is that you lead with that. Well, you haven't defined a necessity that I'm causing anything. How am I a healthy employee, a productive, a willing, an able, a supportive, whatever other word you want to say to bolster your need to work and your enjoyment with that employer? Put all those in there. How is that a financial hardship to the employer? And then you're just describing the impossibility that cannot be ever be made a record by the duty imposed by the federal law, federal rule, right? So you already anticipate, they can't, you bring all this stuff up, how is that a fund? Well, they can't answer that. There's not going to be a necessity in that. Is this a silver bullet? No, but your record's going to look a whole lot better just going by the black and white, even these law firms' website explanation. All these duties and these obligations and these things, the burdens that are supposed to happen, they become line items of dereliction. It was their duty to do so, and they didn't do it as dereliction of the duty to do it. And until those are met, this matter before you as an employee should not even be moving along at all. And that's why I say get your process started. Even if it might sound wrong, you can amend that problem. And you can start bringing it more into the fold as you understand better. Simply put, the interactive process, again, this is the statement of the union that I've focused on. I didn't know what the due process was. What was this appeal supposed to meet? Well, the interactive process was listed here. It was in the union contract. Let's go with it. I'm telling you, this is fluid, folks. I don't know more than just to keep going on using what I read. I'll use that term because it's right in there for a union member in their contract. It's right in there to have to do by the employer. And that's why the representative picked it up and said, hey, they breached this. That can't be good, right? Let's turn this over to the attorneys and let's look. Simply put, the interactive process allows an employer and employee to identify and implement options. Can I repeat that? This is not a cut and dried, unqualified rejection. Simply put, the interactive process allows an employer and employee to identify and implement options that address a disabled worker's limitations that work best for both parties. In other words, there's also implied here, you need to work, when you have something you think you could work out, you need to work it out to see if it will work out. Not cut and dried, mandatory, shut the door, get away, you're not going to get, oh, we're going to suspend you, this and that and the other. Nothing here in this description from the legal law firm says that. No, this is reflecting the law. This is reflecting the rule. The rule is deemed to be a law where it's not, even agency rules are considered as law, right? So don't get lost in this stuff. Just work with it. Move it through for yourself. For more information, the interactive process and reasonable accommodations, which I did not go to, didn't have enough time, see the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's enforcement guidelines. This is a group I found faults with. Point is, that's where everyone goes to get the guidelines. That's what the system speak wants you to speak through. I say, go ahead, where it's not violating your statutory, your constitution, whatever, fundamental rights, whatever, within a context of a labor, use it. What's been the problem? What's been the problem when I read hundreds of Massachusetts state police face being fired over vaccine mandate and see inside the article that they didn't offer anything to do with exceptions? That would be one of the offers that these cops, state troopers, know. These are intelligent people, aren't they? They know the law, right? They're law enforcement, right? Oh, a group of state police troopers and commanders. If you didn't think this is military as well. Military time. Well, he knows them when you see them, folks. Have hired a Boston law firm as hundreds in the agency face being fired for not taking the coronavirus vaccine. A source told the Herald more than 300 troopers, sergeants, lieutenants, detective lieutenants, and captains, if you don't think this is military, and staff infections likely are in the on that group, and some have already caught COVID, giving them antibodies. Isn't that all irrelevant? Where the business has not declared the necessity relative to this or shown any one of those people, notwithstanding that they're cops. These are people too. They're working. Okay. They deserve their employment. Maybe not the way they're executing it. That's neither here nor there. This is an example. Even state people aren't so smart. They go to lawyers who aren't apparently so smart that have allowed all this, that allowed them to get there, and they're worried that they're not going to have their jobs. And I'm asking, when I read that, why? What did I just read to you for the last 20 or so minutes relative to the demands on the employer? I don't care who it is. They're at state or what shows you they're all underneath this DOL, right? Whether it's state or whether it's a private employer. And one of the answers back was, a court case came to me, well, if it's in the jurisdiction where these affidavits are, well, the appellate court said that a third party, you don't have a constitutional right against a third party. And I said, okay, let's just jump into contract law, the labor contract. And they're still having to follow this DOL. And so I added for those people, I bet that had that come on them, I added the labor law unconscionability part. And a couple of other things relative to what the employer, relative to a labor contract, would be violating in that contract. I just added it, folks, just on top of the rest. And then we brought the other stuff for the DOL. Right? So I'm trying to show you this is not, it's not really so hard. You just got to know what's available to you. And now we have contract law violations against a third party. And I told you before when I saw that, it was like, you know, well, here it is. I said, the worst thing we're going to face is the government's reliance on third-party interference with your life. And I finally got evidence that's what they're doing. After the fact. I already know it's there. I'm responding that way. So what had happened? I wasn't shocked that, oh, we can't use constitutional rights against an employer. No, I just interjected the fact of the violation of contract law, and that even then has to follow the DOL stuff that I just read to you. And there's this discussion that goes on. It's just not one-sided. And I'm telling you to remind you, in administrative process, the record has to show on the record, by writing, everything that was done in order to comport to that rule to show that it was working in fair and good faith. Okay, I'm pausing. I got to slow down maybe a little bit. I need you to you can't think. I'm speaking too fast probably. It's a good thing we have the podcast. For those of you interested, you can go back and read over this. But folks, think about that. Overheated here a little bit, trying to get this information out to you. It comes fast, but folks, listen to how fast it comes out, and it's confirmed everywhere I go to tell you, to say, here, you can read this, and you should be coming up with the same thing. I don't think I'm unreasonable in my interpretations of this, or more importantly, the application of the interpretation of this. Anyway, so there's a bunch of cops up there in Boston looking at losing their jobs. These are indicative of everybody across the nation. This is us, folks. This is our society being taken down, and 300 cops who are supposed to know the law aren't enforcing the law one little bit, have to go to a representative for them to defend themselves in a bar member. If you don't understand how this is also wired by the occupier. I really have, these are 300 well-meaning people, probably fairly intelligent. No, I know, the Supreme Court says you can be too smart to be a cop. I get all that. And I know the problems, and I know that we shouldn't be oppressed by these cops, but they are military, so we knew them when we seized them. And then we kind of backed off and didn't, we don't want to talk about that part or deal with it. But anyway, these are our people. These are amongst our own folks that don't have, you're seeing evidence, they don't have a clue. They're going to go to one guy, one girl, that claims to be some attorney savior, and my experience is they don't do the right answer. And so this is my other problem, and I got to get to this. Even though we're going to get a review on the affidavits relative to a union attorney review, whether it complied with their union contract, I had to just send, it just occurred to me to send here yesterday to my colleague who's on the actually the front end of it, the voice that you hear on the website where the affidavits are. I said, we have to even question the attorneys. Did they take the vaccine? For two reasons. One is they're conducive to taking a vaccine without finding out they didn't in the law, which means they don't understand the law as a law, as an attorney. Number two is if they took the vaccine, we know the CDC has told us that there are adverse effects, a couple of which are your physicality is harmed and your mental capacity is harmed, and you don't know it. And so I've told you we were going to have a problem as the asymptomats trying to work our way through this. If you rely on anybody else that has taken that jab, you have to be able to put together the objection and the challenge that they cannot be someone who is underneath the jab. They're philosophically amenable to it, and they might be adversely affected to it. Not because you say, but because the CDC says. They never challenge that up front, not as a religious condition, not as a medical condition, but the first clause in both affidavits, that there was never a non-fraudulent necessity for the business or exigency relative to the state, relative to an actual communicable disease for any one of these troopers, lieutenants, sergeants, staff, infections, whatever. Okay? Applicable law here is not even known by your law enforcers, and they're going to a representative on top of that who may or may not understand, and I would have to suggest they don't, because none of them, the bar members, have stepped up to explain the fraud, which is clear on the face of the record. The failure of whether it was the governor or your local health official to comport with the legislative mandates. And then the limitations on them. So on the employee law, employee-employer duty, did you hear any hard and fast rules either? Even the undue hardship is not so harsh. It's not so fast. It does have to be explained. And then that's a subjective, that is a judge thing. Did they do it quite enough? Are they really being affected? But I don't understand how a healthy, productive employee is a necessity causing problem to an employer. But moving on, just showing you in the world, people we would think of doing law enforcement don't know the first thing about law enforcement. They haven't turned around and exposed the failure in law of the fraud and made arrests. And now they're suffering, and they are having to go to someone else because they don't understand how just to file the affidavit, even go to the DOL's website and do what I just told you. Did you hear in the necessity, in the financial hardship, and the problems amongst the employees, did you hear anything about religion or medical complications? Did you hear anything right there? Now the answer is pretty quickly no, right? So it's not relevant to either one of those, is it? For all of you that don't believe in the religious or medical thing, don't have a doctor, you have another way in. It's just what those two affidavits bring up, if you know what you're reading. if you know how to read what I write. And I wrote all this stuff here, what, a couple months ago now? Was it a month ago, 2 months ago? I don't know. Just anticipation of what had to happen, what was supposed to go on. So, moving through, folks, get your paperwork in. Those of you that are employed, don't lose your work without having a say. Go back to the DOL. Use even the 3 bullet points. Keep pressing that. Don't let the employer run away. Try to get away with it. You have to probably go do now when the rejections on a discrimination complaint. You heard in that lawyer's group that it would be a discrimination complaint. You also have other things I won't get too technical on. You have your habeas possibility. You have an equity action possibly. I can't get people to do basic letters, so I'm not going to go to that point, but you've heard me talking about all of these things, and you saw that one savings clause speak exactly to these things that you have available to you. All right, so now moving into a thing that hit my, must be links that came to me. I'm right here. I'm starting to forget where I get some of this stuff. Thank you, and to Gary L. And Gary L., thank you for doing this, and because you put it on Twitter, I'm going to ask out, folks, I would like to have you give a prayer for Gigi's boo. On Twitter, Gary L. said that she's been very sick, and I'd like to have your help with that. I hope, I haven't heard from back from last week. I hope it's getting better. It got very dire, and so that's likely why we haven't been hearing much from them. And I hope it's not an insult to ask, because, again, it wasn't private to me. It was on Twitter. A little bit shocked to hear that. But if we can send our prayers or whatever good vibes that you may want to send out for her and them and anybody else, folks. We're in a bad way. And you see, we don't hear about this stuff either. But moving into this next story sent to me by Gary L., Hail Hydra, COVID vax, synthetic biology, and bioelectronics. Really interesting video. Really cool to listen to it. Again, I won't underwrite all of it. I was appreciative in a minimum. There's a lot to say here, but in the minimum, I was appreciative that the picture and the stories that have been going about what Dr. Maydev have found, what looked to be a Hydra organism in a vial or in a slide that she was looking at, and they're looking at these vaccines, so-called, these chemical weapons. That the author here, the poster of this Hail Hydra, didn't identify it as the Hydra, even though there is a connection to Hydra in a real diabolical sense. She identified it more, because when I looked at this thing, it didn't look like the Hydra to me. She identified it as a potential synthetic neuron. And I said, that is really what it really looks like, a potential synthetic neuron. However, again, in all the possibilities, it also looked like to me a kind of like a fungal growth, a contamination, if you please, in the substances that they're giving people. And so I'm not sure what, again, this is just information. I think this lady does a great work pulling it all together. She's definitely in behind the woodshed, identifying what could be going on, what it looks like it's going on. They're talking about and showing some organizational, synthetically mechanical organizational structures. We don't know what they are. I surmise something from one quick little slide. It looks like the toroids that you're seeing connect up are certainly not natural. They are the novel, whatever the heck they are. They are still chemistry in that they're using elements in certain forms to do, if you will, they're programmed assembly. And it appeared that the discs that you see that they're saying, again, we didn't see this for ourselves, they say under a normal microscope, which is another potential problem as the macro sizing dealing with nanotechnology particles, that the structures that are made and her examples of how they work appear to be actually constructions of potentially graphene oxide that look like when they were without the suspension, they show a quick slide, only just a second, they showed a picture of it where Dr. Maydej let it dry out, and it turned into what appears, this in a quick view, to be more looking like iron oxide. But it's black, and it looks like it's attached to graphene, which is that assembly that they need, and without the support of the solution, it can't self-assemble into these structures. an idea for you just to think about what we might see in this. But this is a very interesting video. I wanted to pass this on. It's just interesting to see what are we really dealing with. It is not biological. It's synthetic biology, like it says. The lady here, and I apologize, don't have her name, has been doing some research to be able to pull all this together. Again, I identified the distinction in her work by her not saying, oh, this is a hydra, but saying it was a neuron, because it doesn't look like a real hydra. But we don't know the size. So all these things, in fact, the iron oxide-looking thing that also looks like it's a substrate of the graphene oxide actually is macro-sized as well. This is not an electron microscope we're looking through. And so this is our perception is really a kind of a fumbled here for us. But it gives us an idea what we are. I guess to me it's really, it's confirming there has been some very fascinating technology being developed that just is being put to real sinister possibilities here against us. And I think it's better just to see it and think about the possibility because, as I said, if I know now, or I think I know, the studies are showing certain substances, a chemical attack, I can do a chemical antidote. And so we're seeing a study that says ivermectin will disassemble the graphene oxide substrate to take apart whatever they've assembled. We also know that the polyphenols in dark berries oxidation connections to prohibit their connection. There's things that we can look at. Think of this as a chemical attack, not as a biological attack. It's synthetic biology. It's fascinating. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am to see what our minds come up with and kind of do, and then to, in the same moment, gasping in horror for what we're doing with this stuff. But I'm still waiting for the Jetsons car, okay? Anyway, neat stuff, cool. I want you to see it. But I did want also want to point out something that I noticed. And again, this is just ideas. This is like into the next realm. I can't really go deep into this stuff, but it's just an interesting observation. It just so happened at 45:54, a very important time that some of us are interested to always watch come up in Gary L. particularly, at 45:54 in her video, there was a mention of a foundation that's made investment into an synthetic brain. This is kind of like the organoid technology I was talking about and what they're doing behind the scenes. And what they're trying to do is making synthetic organisms. I want you to understand this is not life. Think about it. Okay, I just made an assertion of fact. I don't believe any of this is life. It's chemistry that's novelly working together and shown. It's assembled. It's a programmed assembly and reassembly, actually, as well. It's very interesting. It's like a mind over when you start getting into chemistry and you see how things bind and combine and shift and energy transfers. And we're even talking about light now and all this other really interesting stuff. Interesting to me, in high school, I was into designing bioluminescent materials before those glow lights. I did it the hard way. I just did it because I was interested. I wanted to wonder because I was going to go into oceanography. How do these animals create cold light? What is cold light? Heat is usually what we feel. Anyway, so this is all it comes to me as well. We're now seeing in this two technology, light becomes a factor still. Biological light comes as a factor. Well, it's all actually chemistry when you get right down to it. And then so in the 45:54 at the the Hail Hydra, talking about this Hydra connection, the snake, it was a Keck Foundation mentioned in one of the articles. K-E-C-K. K-E-C-K. My mind said Keck. K-E-K. I don't know anything about that thing. It's a meme or something. It has to do with that froggy-looking thing. I said, I wonder. And so I typed in, what is Keck? I don't even know about it. I just know it's had to go with the Trump dumpsters, whatever the heck, that following. They made up this meme. Where did it come from? It was so interesting just to watch that little thing pop up. Well, I put that in, and what came up to find is the truth about Pepe the Frog and the cult of Keck. I rolled down far enough, and I start finding out that Keck actually has a couple of names. It ends up being a little-known Egyptian god. You see it on the bas reliefs on the rock and thing. And as a frog, it's the male counterpart. The female counterpart is a serpent, is a snake. Also of a group of gods of chaos. And I looked at that and I said, well, I don't know how to go down this rabbit hole, but boy, isn't that interesting that Keck Foundation is investing in making synthetic brains. Interestingly, in the Hydra program, which you're going to find out is pretty prevalent. And then we also find that this is an Egyptian god, a little known one, and we know about symbols, and we know about ancient cultures, and we know about societies, and whatever all they do. And I just want to offer, watching this come through, just to be able to identify no look no different than looking back at Operation Lockdown and all your other symbology, the symbology involved in all this. What a setup, and what another takedown, what a setup to get buy-in for something that just passes by your gaze. It sits there right for everyone to see. I really don't know that it has anything to do with it. But that it's integral in all these things are always integral is really a fascination to me. And it's hard to say that there isn't a driver behind it. Why? Because I still want to believe a little bit there's a natural thing going on. I can't prove that at all. But like I was wondering last night, where was this thing? I've been able to identify school flu, summer flu, all the flus I know, the colds, the head colds that come through summer. I've been able to identify every one of them. All these almost two years, I've never been able to identify this thing called COVID-19. Nothing. Zero. And you think if it was, my thought is, if you think it was a global thing, we'd be watching, you know, the flies drop even. Nothing. Anyway, getting back to this, and maybe the failure, but the psychological setup that could be going on with Keck, the cult of Keck, and what it relates to, found it interesting that the Keck Foundation is part of the synthetic future biology, synthetic biology supplantation of our life. Now, I ran across an interesting statement, and I sent a link off to be presented, but the website now doesn't show it. I think I want to, it's going to be 6 minutes, and I hope the audio comes out all right. It was a statement that was done back in March, but I think it's so concise as to what we're facing. And it was for those of you that want me to do more work, more reports out of the UK or over the pond, that's not a decision for me more than what comes on the news cycle to integrate with what I'm going to say. But this does relate to someone that, an intelligence across the pond that I think those of you over across the pond can relate, can actually work with. I would hope these people are still there because it did come up in March. It was related to the world movement of rejection, if you will, of this whole thing. I don't want to play this because it offers any answers. It just says stand up, unite, that kind of stuff. I say good. But the way they describe what's happened to us, the way she describes it, Dr. here, is really interesting. I want to play it. It's going to take a few minutes here. I think I'm going to go ahead and invest that time with you, for you, and let someone else speak to this, the absurdity and the reason why it really is time. It's many months later. We need to stand up. I've been offering the mechanisms on that are offered, black and white, no choices. No choices are that they're there. You don't have to make it up. You don't have to invent the words. It's all there to hold the employer's feet to the fire for the thing you know they're not going to do as they pass the fraud along. That's all we're doing. We are the ones that are going to stop the fraud. This statement by her, and I apologize to the doctor, I don't remember now who it is. She'll say it. I thought it concisely makes the case for us to do that.
Across this island and across the world, there are millions of people who are awakening to the understanding that this current health crisis, this so-called pandemic, is a Trojan horse which has been used to introduce a new era for humanity. The Great Reset, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, Building Back Better, whatever catchy, chirpy name the bankers and billionaires are calling it, it's not good for you and me. For the ordinary people. Relationships between individuals, families, communities, government and nations will change fundamentally. They're coming for you, your family, your job, your savings, your home, your pension, your culture, your traditions, your freedom, your very way of life. Unless we unite to resist, we do not consent. This is not a conspiracy theory, but the outworking of a scheme written by people who hate the human race. Agenda 21 has been implemented now and will come to pass unless we unite to resist. We do not consent. Last year, a seasonal respiratory virus of high infectivity but low pathogenicity passed across the world and sadly took with it people who were very old, who were already very sick, and most of whom were in the last months and years of their lives. There were younger people who died. May God have mercy on their soul and comfort their families and friends. But in terms of the overall all-cause mortality, there was nothing to see. Seasonal viruses do this every year. They have done since time began, and they will continue to do so no matter what humans do. In 2020, no country was there a significant increase in overall mortality compared to the past. Ireland in this pandemic actually increased her population by a couple of percent. If we take away the track and trace system, calling for the first time in medical history a case, someone who's perfectly well, who has no symptoms, and which is going to cost the UK government £37 billion over 2 years. I don't even know what £37 billion looks like, what it would buy. Would it be two hospitals? Would it be five hospitals? Would it be 1,000 nurses' jobs? I have no idea. But these PCR tests measure nothing. They are an illusion to create a crisis. If we take away the fact that the WHO changed the rules, changed the way in which we measure disease impact by saying that any death within 28 days of a positive PCR test was due to COVID, and even without a positive test, if you had symptoms, shortness of breath, fever, the things that people die from every day, that was COVID too. If we take away the hourly, incessant misery porn in the legacy media, dolefully recounting the figures and scrutinising the anguished last hours of those who were taken, and the po-faced politicians with crocodile tears pretending to care. If we take away the psychological abuse of populations across this planet, using applied behavioural psychology designed to keep them in terror. If we take away the signage, the arrows, the one-way systems, walk, don't walk, the yellow notices on every flat surface, the sanitization, the masks, all the paraphernalia of this neurolinguistic program and mental abuse, which tells us that we are the biohazards, we are a danger to our families and friends. If we take all this away, there is nothing to see. The emperor has no clue. But of course, there was something to see, wasn't there? Viruses don't make laws, governments do. But what we did see, what we saw, was removal of our most basic and inalienable rights to work, to earn, to move, to associate, to kiss, to hug, to go to church, to bury our dead with dignity, to live our lives as we see fit. We saw the removal of a right to speak, to protest, to object to this tyranny. We saw censorship, character assassination, and banishment of scientists and professors who dared to offer an alternative narrative. We saw our children and young people locked up, denied their education, the right to play outside, to live their precious young lives, however they and their parents saw fit. We've seen millions of the poorest and most marginalised people on the planet pushed to starvation and death because of the economic fallout, because poverty kills. I've worked as a GP throughout this past year, and I've not seen people gasping for breath from COVID, but people utterly abandoned by their health system. People in despair from loneliness, from isolation, from fear. People who haven't seen their families and loved ones for months and whose lives are infinitely poorer as a result. I've seen delayed cancer diagnoses, people having treatments cancelled just willy-nilly, people dying waiting for elective procedures, people in pain who can't get help. Estimates vary, but it's now assumed that between 200,000 and 500,000 extra deaths will occur in the area covered by the NHS. And that's assuming that this lunacy of lockdown stops. And a similar figure, obviously, adjusted for the population in the south of Ireland. The cure is much, much worse than the disease. It's time to move on. This was not about health. It never was about health. It's smoke and mirrors. There are around 30 published papers internationally showing that right across the globe, lockdowns don't work. And if they do, why are we still locked up a year later? The health and economic fallout from this will cost millions of lives, and it will end the way that we live now forever. It's over. The lie has been exposed. We must stand together. We do not condemn. On the 20th of March, there's going to be a worldwide rally for freedom. World Freedom Day. Across this beautiful planet, people like you and me will stand together to say enough is enough. We do not consent. Here on the island of Ireland, people from every part, from all political backgrounds, from all faiths and none, from every county and province will stand together to say no. Ulster says no, but so does Munster, Leinster, Connacht, England, Scotland, Wales, Germany, Holland, Peru, right across the world. We will stand together to withdraw our consent. Go to www.freedom.com. freedom-alliance.org for resources to help you through all of this. And join us in the Rally of Freedom. I look forward to seeing you there.
She says unite and do it, and I'm saying you each have a power on your own. And however you want to work that out, this is totally within, again, our power and attacking each one of us. We can't really look out and see anybody else in a way. I've been saying if you bring this together, you will show the example for others as well. And so the thing we've been promised is endless disease. When you read early enough into the documentation, find out about what's going on. And what was advanced to me here in an email, which I didn't have time, I don't have time to get to it this week. It was some email, some videos to watch, but it's something on, apparently the horizon is coming on, and I validated a bit that it is being a promotion that's coming on that I wanted to advance before I even get to it. The Marburg virus disease has been sent to me that looks like it's starting to get some wind in the sails around another thing coming. And quickly, it's just a Marburg virus disease is a rare but severe hemorrhagic fever which affects the people and non-human primates. So, and this is serious, and it's also in the same vein of the types of viruses and Ebola they've been working on all the time. I hadn't heard about it yet. I don't look around actually too much about the next one. I just know they're going to be making stuff up. So I quickly put this in. Sure enough, up pops, spillover diseases are emerging faster than ever before, thanks to humans. And I looked at that and I said, there's two messages right there. First of all, you're the problem again. This is the National Geographic, one of the premier propaganda stations, as I'm finding out now. You know, over these years, you don't have a thought. But here we are. Spillover diseases are emerging. Well, this is not as this Marburg is not actually a spillover. However, they want to promote that it is from the ongoing. It's the spillover. Now, also telegraphs whom the human they're talking about is doing. They blame the humans. Humans are cancer. This is sustainable development, first of all. Secondly, the spillover is from those humans that are violating you. And so there's a whole other double, at least a double meaning just in this story around alone, and they are promoting the Marburg virus on the horizon here. I'm not saying be afraid. I'm saying this is the promotion. This is what's going to get, you saw what's happened to get people to move. I told you this was going to happen. They can pull out the next boogeyman, and people will jump. Those that didn't jump before will jump. Those that have already jumped, they're done. And so here we see that the point, and I wanted just to, before I can get to it, I want people to know, look around, start noticing where the stories might start popping up to make more impetus to have people go insane, have people just give it up. You are going to have to become even more grand, more settled, more focused, get more into the narrow path. I've been offering actions that can be taken in order for tools to be able to do that. Once you, I told you, you can reduce things down to summary bullet points of what was supposed to happen that isn't. Now you can focus on that instead of the, there is no science, right? If there's no necessity, there's no science. I don't even have to get into the argument that epidemiology called science is a fraud. It's statistics and I can cook the books. I don't have to even go there. I hope you appreciated that too. I hadn't said that before. When you stop when you identify they haven't demonstrated the necessity, you don't have to speak about all this other stuff they have control over. Anyway. Thank you for bringing the Marburg up. I'm not sure where this will go. I haven't done the study on it, but it is a promotion coming on, and it's all over the place, actually, when you look around. But to show you also they've been working on it and where this might be going, therapeutic treatment of Marburg and Raven viruses infection in non-human primates with a human monoclonal antibody. So they've already got the monoclonal antibodies. Again, this is novel stuff. This is more commerce. This is what's coming down. They'll get you to do these monoclonal antibodies. I don't know the technology behind all that. We've heard a little bit about them. But this is all getting you into structure with the pharma, right? These are silent on all this. Remember, biological weapons, bioterrorism and vaccines, a statement of the history of vaccines. And thank you for all these links that coming together that I can only pull from so many to try and build the content in a theme of sorts, in a direction to show you that this is all knowledge. We can take it. I found interesting in this story, biological weapons, bioterrorism and vaccines, they define a distinction in the biological weapons and bioterrorism. What's interesting is bioterrorism can happen by like private industry, like we see Harma doing, and bioweapons is what the government fosters and encourages. And so this was an interesting read, a history of what's going on. It tells you from the beginning, 2001, it looks as if this, you know, if we look at the 9/11 drop the towers, was actually a cover for the biological attacks and the setup of the endless diseases which the military is using to come out at warp speed to take you out, because they have to move quickly to do this. They don't have a military doesn't have much time on a blitzkrieg, if you will, to come and take out their population. And I was hoping I could tell you early on to get people to start moving in the right direction, and that's been a hard cart to push. I can just tell you, to get people to see all that. So as to what they're doing in these biological terrorisms and what the government will underwrite in order to get a private terrorist to work against you, a quick little video came out, somebody getting their shot right next to them. It says rare side effects, they'll tell you, and that's the sarcastic response. Rare side effects of these jabs. One guy getting a jab while the next guy next to him falls flat on his face as a rare side effect of what's going on here. So two people, one of them falls flat on the ground. It's really not odds I really want to address. I also want to give you a link to a statement from a woman who's coming on to what their plan is. I'm not going to play it for you, but it's just a link. I can't really get, it's an Odyssey website. I can't get much of anything to play on theirs unless I go to a Chrome browser, which I don't like using. And so we're seeing Google and YouTube are giving preferential treatment to certain browsers. But this was interesting, that someone explaining, and that she does it in not, oh, scary, this is the plan for a long time. She's seeing it now. She explains it. I'd like you to hear it. And she's again asking, it's time to get together, folks. And this is it. We've seen enough, I guess, is the point. Whatever part I'm playing to help some folks, I'm glad to be there. I think I can offer a lot to a lot of people who just want to bring this as one more capacity. They build their record as they go to destroy whatever is trying to come against them. Don't give it air. Don't give it a life. Just get it to the point of the burden that was failed and keep it down. That's how you put the fire out. You never let it up. You dig it out quick and you take it down. Suppress it. A federal whistleblower, a bunch of information for you here as I'm moving, have to move kind of quick. Federal whistleblower goes public on secret recording. This is the Project Veritas. They tell you that this thing is full of Shastris T, adverse effect reporting under the mat. They're showing that people on the inside are saying this stuff is just no good. They know it. They know it's no good. They're on the inside. They are now seeing enough to say, I can't be silent anymore. If we need more information, if you need to be able to pull these out, have your bag of law, bag of facts, bag of rejection, bag of they didn't answer this when they're supposed to answer this, when you get to mitigation side, this link is important. There's a transcript for you and a video to show. Again, this is just a secondary circumstantial to you, but it gives you the idea what you might want to track down if you want to fortify your position. Now, moving completely out of COVID into something that I have done a long time ago in mine. Again, thank you for the link to this. It's repulsive to me even to even discuss it, but I also make the same observations I do all the time. What got me all turned around when I was doing a documentary on child services and what children's services really do, and you consider them adult services within the establishment, is another supposed story here about how Ohio takes down largest child trafficking ring in history. Well, it's for Ohio, but we are coming after you. I want you to remember, this is no different than we identified the repeating stories over and over. We're coming after you. I think I reported about one of these in another state, but I made the observation at that time relative to my documentary and my study, and I survived it, where everybody else that followed whatever I was doing and see people that preceded me that I didn't even know about, they're all dead when they go after the child trafficking through the system itself, child services. I don't know of anybody alive doing this research, and they all found attorneys, the social workers, the judges. This is how I identified it. Was a procedural problem the judge created on his own to deny a relief to a mother and father. And that's where I got in on it. And there is no, if you look in this list, oh, they got some elites, they say, but none of them are judges, none of them are the social workers, none of them are the attorneys. My research and others behind around me, before me and after me, have found are involved in the systemic child trafficking under child services. I want you to take note of that. It's repulsive to me to talk about it. I don't know what else to do more about it. There's been some great work done since what I've done, and I don't even know. I tell you, I don't know why I'm alive, except that when they destroyed all my evidence, they didn't have anything to go further. So that was the last time I've been put in jail, and they kept me together while they destroyed all this evidence and tracked down everything to get rid of it. They even went into other programs because I was utilizing the PEG access for video. I was doing the broadcast to that. But moving on here, the consequence of what's going on with this fraud, and we're not stopping it. Again, global food prices hit fresh decade high. These are going to go. I just read something today on Twitter, quickly went through. Oat futures are way going up. This is the plan to take you down. If you aren't preparing food, folks, give it. This is it. I don't know what else to say. Better to be safe than sorry. It's going to get really expensive, and they're also interfering with the supply chain. It's just what it was set up to do. When you put everything on the sustainable global socialism supply chain, you have failure points in cereal. And so this gets you back to getting support to focus the people to start providing for yourself locally. I just found out the hay, price of hay went from $25 a bale to $25. What does that mean? It means that your beef is going to go skyrocket, and most of your ranchers are going out if they can't feed their cattle. And when they do feed their cattle, it's going to be GMO corn or whatever, soy, whatever stuff that they're going to do. Unvaccinated Canadians can't travel, lose government benefits. Folks, please, in Kanukistan, listen to what I've been saying. Go after the fact of the fraud. They don't have it presented a non-fraudulent exigency. This from Technocracy News. The unvaccinated in Canada are effectively on permanent lockdown, effectively forcing many into compliance and others into despair. According to Trudeau, however, prompt vaccination allows you to get back to the things you love is extortion and coercion. For us in the United States, Title 42, Section 1981, it is your civil rights. But you can fight it, as you heard me talk about it earlier in the broadcast here. Moving into Rand Paul warns health authoritarians are hysterical about the unvaccinated. This is insanity. You get to point this out. A senator actually identifies it. He must be on the front end of a lot of complaints. These people in a public health official are insane. They're hysterical now about this. So don't expect reason from them. And that's why we're looking for evidence, if we can get it. And I think these people know enough to stay away from providing the evidence, and it's becoming a little bit more trouble as they fancy pants dance around a simple request anymore. But moving into Sweden, suspends Moderna vaccine for those under 30. Take note, folks. Why aren't they doing this? Trudeau is insisting on this in Canada. Kanukistan. How about I heard all of the EU is dropping some of this as well, relative to people that are young. You can just find that. Secret warrants are moving on about the consequence. Secret warrants against Google search terms on the rise. They want to make you the domestic terrorist. This has been predicted. I told you this years and years ago. It's now, they don't get the redneck dentist to go do it in a small room, as I heard his broadcast. You can listen to it on Saturday on the podcast. No, they're going to do it by Google now. They're going to private-public partnerships. So there's lots of plunder on the Treasury about how this works. As we've also found out, DARPA accused of sucking up Twitter data. Why? Because they need to take the temperature of the natives, that they're not so restless or in the correct ways, or they're not organizing up to throw off the occupier. As this broadcast is all set up to try and do. Mark on the beast, not mark of the beast. You get to do that. Main Street Press silent on the JFK deadline. I just want to throw this in. It will be about time. I never thought we'd ever see this, but October, 26th or so, the JFK papers for the CIA are supposed to be put out. I'm looking forward just to see, did we think about it? Have we figured that puzzle out? Can we move on? Can we now defend against the attack against everybody when we saw this subversion coming? Grimner, get better for you with yourself, please, quickly. I know you're trying hard and doing what you can. All the syndicators, thank you for spreading the word. Everybody liking and everything, I appreciate that. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, for nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Well, that's worth... opening up a can of whoop-ass to you is like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.